This is Grow in Grace, a daily teaching ministry of Palmetto Baptist Church. The gospel reminds us that we are united with Christ. His work secures our position as kingdom citizens. When we put on the shoes of the gospel of peace, we're reminded of our peace with God through unity with Christ. With that peace, we can push back against the powers of the adversary and push forward to share the good news. Today, we'll conclude a sermon from Pastor Sam titled, Wearing the Shoes of the Gospel of Peace, from Ephesians 6 and other passages. Let's listen together so we can grow in grace.
As long as Jesus is alive, that peace stands. That's why the resurrection is so important. That's why Paul said to the Corinthians, if Jesus didn't resurrect from the dead, then we are of all the world, of all the people in the world, those of us who are banking on this righteousness and on this obedience and on this trust, on this peace. If Jesus didn't rise from the dead, we are done. We are of all men most miserable. But he did rise. And he is at the right hand of the Father. And as long as Jesus lives, this peace is yours. You don't earn it. You don't enhance it. It's like, well, thanks for the peace. Now let me polish it a little bit. Let me just add a little bit to it. No. You got the very best version of peace the universe has ever seen. There is no improving on it. You got the very pristine version of peace, and it is yours as long as you belong to Jesus. And as a Christian, how long are you going to belong to Jesus? Forever. Now, can I just stop here for a second? There ought to be something so stunning about that news that you actually wonder if it's true. Like, are you sure? And that's why Paul keeps coming back to peace in the book. This is so amazing because nothing else on earth looks like this. There is nothing on earth that will give anybody this kind of assurance about this kind of peace. No matter who you are, no matter what you've done, no matter how deep you struggle, no matter how far you have fallen, Jesus said, it's never about that. It was always about my obedience. It was always about my righteousness. And therefore, my peace I give to you. You don't earn it. I mean, how many times have we labored throwing brick after brick after brick in our wagon to the point that we can barely pull it, and then we come to church and our pastor throws three more bricks on it, and then we finally just say, there's absolutely no way. That's why Jesus said, no, whoa. That's not my yoke. I'm not putting that on you. My yoke is what? Light. It's easy. Why? Because it's peace. And so you and I have to possess this peace personally. You say, well, how do I get it? I get it the way Jesus said, come unto me, all of you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you what? Rest. Aren't you tired of trying to live up to something God never intended for you to live up to? Man, maybe if I could just cobble enough obedience together, I could get to heaven. Maybe if I could just mount up enough righteousness over here, I could make up for all of the unrighteousness over here. And maybe God will say, okay, you know what? I'm impressed. Come on in. And even as Christians, we have that mentality, don't we? Maybe if I could just not sin for 7 days in a row, my prayer is going to get a little better chance of getting answered. Or maybe if I could just figure out how to pile up my duct tape righteousness, I could impress God and maybe he would sort of accept me. And Jesus just explodes all of that. And he says, this peace is your, my peace I give unto you. So we need to possess this peace personally. And that just comes by recognizing that God is going to give us this peace on the basis of what Jesus did, not on the basis of what I do. On the basis of what Jesus promised to do, not on the basis of what I promised to do. All I can do is come and say, my life is a mess. Look at all of this unrighteousness. Look at all of this disobedience. Lord, I repent. I turn from that, but I don't know how to fix it. I need your forgiveness. I need your obedience. I need your righteousness. And God the Father says, done. Done. It's that simple. And if you've never seen it that way, if you've never done that, then I would invite you this morning, even while I'm preaching, right as you're sitting, to cry out to God and to say, God, this is great news. This is good news. I have heard great joy this morning out of the message that you are publishing, that you reign, that you made a peace, that you extended righteousness, that you gave obedience, that you deliver, that you say, because you reign. And I want to be in your kingdom. I want to be in your family. Please forgive me and embrace me as a son or as a daughter. And you know what? God will do that. So you must possess the peace personally. Secondly, you must protect the peace. You must possess it, but you must protect it with others. Why? Because this matters to God. That's why in Ephesians chapter 4, he talks about preserving the unity of the Spirit with a particular kind of bond. The word bond there is the idea of glue. A substance that holds two broken things together. Or two things that you're trying to join, there is a bond, a glue, a mortar, something that you put together that holds those things together. And God says to you, I've given you a peace. And that peace is in the person of Jesus Christ. And because you now have that peace, you are bonded together with me. You are bonded together with Christ, but you are also bonded together with other Christians. There is a unity that you have with each other that comes out of that. And you have a responsibility to protect that unity. The unity that you have with me is protected by Christ, but the unity that you have with one another is a unity that you have to cultivate. And that's why in Ephesians chapter 4, verses 1, 2, and 3, we are told to work hard. The idea there is to be eager, to labor, to protect the peace that God has given us that holds our unity together. And there are two things that have to happen if I'm going to do that. If I'm going to be at peace with you, and I'm going to be at peace with my family, I'm going to be at peace with my co-laborers, there are two things I have to do. Number one, I have to constantly ask God to help me cultivate His character in my life. And particularly two pieces of that character, and they are lowliness of mind and meekness or graciousness. The lowliness of mind, the humility speaks of how I see myself. And the graciousness, the meekness, is how I interact with other people, what they experience as they encounter me. You know, how many conflicts would be resolved in churches or in our own relationships if we would just say, you know what, I don't deserve this. I'm going to look at it through your lens. I'm going to be gracious and meek. I'm not going to demand to be right. I'm not going to demand to win. I don't have to win. I don't have to be right. I don't have to get even with you. Why? Because my status is not threatened by you, because my status is assured of, by Christ who made this peace. So I'm going to have to cultivate certain dispositions in myself, certain parts of Christ's character, lowliness of mind, and meekness, and then I'm going to have to cultivate some responses that are like Christ's. Specifically, two in Ephesians 4, 1 through 3, long-suffering and forbearance. Long-suffering speaks to tolerating and lovingly just enduring people who are constantly irritated with us. and they're aggressively coming against us because of something they don't like about us or something they wish were different about us. We have an English word for this called animosity. There's some people that, you know, you meet them and 5 minutes in, they don't like you. There's something they saw about you. There's something they heard in you, and they're irritated with you, and they bear some level of animosity. And you know what God says? Put up with that. Just bear it. That's exactly what Jesus did with you. While you were yet a sinner, Christ died for you. And then I'm going to need not just long-suffering, but I'm going to need forbearance with those that I'm irritated with. I can't believe you said that again. I can't believe you did that again. Why can't you just change this? I really don't like this. And there are 100 ways to Sunday that we're irritated. We're irritated with people. We're irritated with how something goes. I gave you my opinion and you didn't listen to it. I wrote you 6 emails and you didn't listen to them. Isn't that true? You know what Paul says? If you're going to keep the unity and the bond of peace, you're not just going to have to be long-suffering to those who are irritated with you. You're going to have to forbear. You're going to have to give up your right to demand things from the people that irritate you. You know, we have to do this in our lives, don't we? And this is exactly what Jesus did. And that brings me to the final thing, and that is this. So why do this? Man, Pastor Sam, I get the wonderful part about owning the peace, and I love that part of the message, but why go through the trouble of this middle part where I've got to protect the peace, where I've got to show this Christ-like character and this Christ-like response to people that just consistently irritate me, or to people that no matter what I do or what I say or how hard I try, they are implacable. They just won't change. And they constantly remain irritated with me and aggravated with me. And yeah, we have this friendship, and yeah, we have this relationship, but it's all one-sided. They're always irritated with me, and no matter what I do, I can't seem to fix it. I can fix it for a little while, and then we're right back. Or what about this person that man, I just try everything. They get on my very last nerve. And they've been on that last nerve for a long time. In fact, I don't even know I have that nerve anymore. Right? So why go through the trouble? And the answer is because of what you're supposed to do with the peace. And so that's the third thing. We must propagate this peace passionately. Paul talked about it this way in verse 19 of chapter 6. Pray for me that words may be given to me in the opening of my mouth boldly to proclaim the mystery of the gospel for which I am ambassador in chains, that I may declare it boldly as I ought to speak. The reason we have the peace and the reason we protect the peace is so that when we go to share the peace, we will have a credible message. I mean, how in the world do you expect a lost person to believe that there can be peace with God through this gospel if the gospel isn't even strong enough to have peace among yourselves? And so we work hard to maintain the peace of the gospel so that we can propagate the amazing shalom of the gospel graciously and boldly by submitting to the gospel personally as its ambassadors, and by being willing to suffer for this gospel. God has chosen to advance the gospel through people who have experienced it. I mean, you think about this. In the New Testament, the people who took the gospel to the world of their day were people who had radically experienced the gospel in their own life. And when they took the gospel to the world of their day, what did they experience? I mean, think about the message. Hey, there is peace with God. You're talking to a Jew. Hey, there is peace with God. There is shalom. A Jew's going, that's awesome. How do I find it? Well, it's in Messiah. Great. We've been waiting for Messiah for all these years. Where is he? Answer, Jesus of Nazareth. immediately there's a reaction to that. You can't be serious. Jesus of Nazareth is not our Messiah. Why? He was crucified on a cross, and God would never let his anointed champion do that or experience that. So he's not our Messiah. And if you keep talking that way, we have an obligation under the law of Moses to do something about your blasphemy. We are going to stone you. Take that message to a Greek, like Paul did in Acts. And everybody's like, this is awesome. Oh, man, are you kidding me? This is the new religion. We've never heard about this. Keep talking to us. And then all of a sudden, he gets to the place where he talks about the resurrection. It's like, hearty, har, har, har. That's not going to happen. Try out telling the Romans that there is a different Caesar, a different Lord. There is somebody other than Caesar who is Lord and who is Savior. Try that one out and see what Imperial Rome does when they find out you're going around the empire telling people that there is a different Lord than Caesar. And that's exactly what Paul is saying to the Ephesians. You strap on an eager readiness to take the gospel into those hard places. And here's what you're going to experience. Jesus said, look, when you're in the world, I'm going to tell you what you're going to experience. You are going to experience trouble. Tribulation. John 16, 33. But be of good cheer, for I have overcome the world. You remember that story that we started with, Marco Polo, Kublai Khan, 500 years of darkness. Well, in 1850, there was another opportunity to go to that same part of the world, and at first it didn't look like much, but one man was ready. He was eager to give up houses and lands and family and friends to take the news of this shalom that Jesus reigns to China. His name was Hudson Taylor. I've been to China, 100 missionaries in 60 years because of Hudson Taylor's passion. And since the time of Hudson Taylor's death, there are over 100 million Chinese Christians in the century after Hudson Taylor strapped on his gospel boots and went to China. I've been to China. Some of you have been to China. I've actually met Christians whose families came to know Christ because of Hudson Taylor's ministry. One man strapped on gospel boots and took the true gospel, the true shalom, and changed an entire country. You know, sometimes I think we think that's so impossible. We'll never be able to do something like that. And it is true. There are sometimes, you know, we have the word go in our values as Palmetto Baptist, and sometimes we get in love with the idea of going. It's like, oh, I'm going to go, and the idea is we get in love with the idea of going. We're going to go to some remote place on the planet. We're going to go to Istanbul. We're going to go here or there. And we're not supposed to get in love with the idea of going. We're supposed to get in love with the idea of sharing. That's why one of the first questions I ask when I do any interviewing of a person who wants to do the go is, well, tell me how you are sharing the gospel right now. Because how in the world are we supposed to think that you're going to share the gospel magically when you get to place X when you're really not doing anything with that gospel now? You want to go plant a church? Well, how many people are you witnessing to, and how's that going? How are you bringing people in to the body of Christ now? I mean, we get in love with the idea of going when we should be in love with the idea of this eager readiness to share the gospel anywhere with anybody. This happened this weekend. And I want to close with this story and then we'll pray. This is what it looked like for about 15 community people here in our region to meet. Men and women from Palmetto Baptist who strapped on gospel boots. There's a language institute in our town, and Pastor Jairo put together an initiative to just do a gospel fellowship with the folks in this language institute. And so they all came to my house on Friday. And for about 4 hours, we just sat around and talked. There were people from Turkey. There were people from Colombia. There were people from Puerto Rico. There were people from Honduras. There was a couple from Japan. And we sat around and we ate and we talked, and the gospel was shared in multiple private conversations. And I would suggest to you that that could happen to any one of you. There was a couple that came into one of the places in my home where I have a display of butterflies, and they wanted to know about these butterflies, and I began sharing the story behind these butterflies. A good friend of mine came to know the Lord because of his study in college of intelligent design, and it was connected to the study of butterflies. And so now, as a very successful businessman, he gives away huge displays of beautiful butterflies to people and tells them the story of how he came to Christ. Well, I have one of those displays, and this couple wanted to hear about it. And they had an opportunity, in a very personal and private way, to hear the gospel of the peace of God that comes through Christ. And that wouldn't have happened on Friday night if about 15 of our Palmetto Baptist members weren't willing to strap on their gospel boots and say, can we get together? Can we have a meal? Can we talk gospel? You can do that. And there is an opportunity coming up to do that very soon in our church. It's simple. You say, well, I want to wear gospel boots, but you know, I don't know what that means. Well, let me give you an example of Go for Us. We're going to have an opportunity to have a trunk or treat as a church. Are you kidding me? Trunk or treat? Yeah. Do you know what every parent is looking for right now whose kids want to go trunk or treating? They're looking for a place to do it what? Safely. And so why not use our trunks for gospel opportunity and gospel outreach? All it means is you bring your car and some candy and you sit around and you talk to people that come up. You say, well, I mean, Pastor, I don't know. That's like my family day. That's kind of when we're all together. That's kind of, you know, I don't know. I want to do that. Well, I mean, that's the point. That's the point. If we're not really interested in something as simple as using our car and our trunk and a few little pieces of candy with a gospel communication inserted to say, we want to put on the gospel boots we have in a very simple way, what makes us think we're going to be able to do it in a hard way? And I just want to challenge you as a church, before you think too hard about going somewhere far away, let's think about going somewhere really close. Let's think about something as simple as using our trunks and our cars and our houses, and our backyards, and our picnic table to strap on our gospel shoes with our neighbors and our friends and say, can we tell you about the most amazing peace that God has made?
Thank you, Pastor Sam. We'll continue this sermon series, Winning the War for Your Soul, next time on Grow in Grace. Today's speaker, Dr. Sam Horn, is the lead teaching pastor of Palmetto Baptist Church. PBC meets at 2730 Anderson Road, Greenville, South Carolina. Come join our worship service at 9:30 a.m. every Sunday, or connect with us online at pbcpowdersville.org. Grow in Grace is produced by Ryan Ahrens and C.J. Billiou. Thank you for listening. Please join us again next time so together we can grow in grace.